very big reading, very long reading today. And I can find my message. Today I'm going to speak out of the prophets, and I've titled the message, "It's Time to Return to Our Biblical Roots and Even Our Apostolic Roots." So let me explain why I've gone here this way. During the 1990s, a new movement was formed that was known as the Apostolic Movement. And this movement was born out of the Prophets Movement, which started back in the 1980s, where the prophets once glorified Yah and stood for righteousness and holiness and pure faith in Yah. But then by the self-appointed prophets, by their own declaration, it took another turn towards the worst with the forming of the Apostolic Movement, which is controlling most born-anew churches to this very day. So according to the International Coalition of Prophets, it says an apostle is a Christian leader, gifted, taught, commissioned, sent by God with the authority to establish the foundational government of the church within an assigned sphere of ministry by hearing what the Spirit is saying to the churches and by setting things in order according to the growth and maturity of the church. So I suppose when you look at that, you could say, oh, well, Malachi and I are apostles, but we're not. We don't class ourselves as apostles, but by them we are. Notice that these leaders are to establish foundational government within their church. In other words, the rest of the body had to submit to them, and indeed will submit to their leadership as the church matures. This in itself overrules the foundations of the biblical word and is the reason that most of us are no longer part of that movement to this day. They tried to bring in a move of Yah in their own strength. This movement has now declined, and so have the believers who were once on fire and soaked with tears over the hunger for a move of Yah. Now the fire and the tears are gone, and most believers are satisfied just getting through a service to say, we've been to church. The same thing happened in Eliyahu's day. The altar was torn down, there were no longer any tears, and Baal had become the god of the people. It's no different. Baal is a god that could answer no prayer and consume no sacrifice with fire. Baal is a god designed by man that put no conviction upon their sinful activity. He is a god that would not and could not answer any prayer. There is still that kind of god living today, a god of convenience, a god that says all I need is to feel good about myself, a god with no convictions. I can do what I want as long as I say I love God. How many people do we know like that? This is not the Elohim we want to worship, nor do we want to bow to the will of man, but only to the will of Yehovah. In saying all that, I want to now go to Malachim Aleph 1 Kings 18, 18 to 21. And he answered, I haven't troubled Israel, you have, you and your father's house, by abandoning Yehovah's mitzvot and following the Baalim. Now order all Israel to assemble before me at Mount Carmel, along with the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of the Asherah who eat at Isabel's table. So Ahav sent word to the people of Israel and assembled the prophets together at Mount Carmel. Eliyahu stepped forward and before all the people and said, "How long are you going to jump back and forward between two positions? If Yehovah is Elohim, follow him. But if it's Baal, follow him." And the people answered not a word. Let's have a look at that again. If Yehovah is Elohim, follow him. But if it's Baal, follow him. And the people answered not a word. The people, actually not saying a word, answered Eliyahu in their silence. I am saying today that the same thing that Eliyahu said, if you're going to serve Yah, then serve him with your whole heart and soul. But if you're going to serve another god, such as Hasatan or any other god that you want to serve, follow him. I'm actually saying it's time. It's time to make up our minds who we are going to serve. The creator or the creature. If we cannot serve two masters, we either follow Yah and his word or we follow man and his word. And that's why most of us today are sitting here and not going off to a Sunday church. Let's have a look at Malachim Aleph 18:22-24, please. Then Eliyahu said to the people, I alone am the only prophet of Yehovah who was left, while Baal's prophets number 450. And let them give us two young bulls, and they can choose the bull they want for themselves. Then let them cut it in pieces and lay it on the wood, but put no fire under it. I will prepare the other bull, lay it on the wood, and put no fire under it. Then you call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of Yehovah. And the God who answers with fire, let him be Elohim. And all the people answered, good idea, and agreed. But then we've got to see Yehovah meet the challenge. It's Yehovah that meets the challenge, not man. In the next slide, please, in 25-29. It says, and Yehovah said to the prophets of Baal, choose one bull for yourselves and prepare it first, because there are many of you. Then call on the name of your God and put no fire under it. They took the bull that was given to them, prepared it, and called on the name of Baal from morning till noon. Baal, answer us. But no voice was heard, and no one answered, as they jumped around on the altar that they had made. Next slide. Around noon, Eliyahu began ridiculing them. Shout louder. After all, he's a god, isn't he? Maybe he's daydreaming. Maybe he's on the potty. Or he's away on a trip. Maybe he's asleep and you have to wake him up. So they shouted louder and slashed themselves with swords and knives, as their custom was, until blood gushed out all over them. So by now it was afternoon. They went on ranting and raving until the time for the evening offering. But no voice came. No one answered. No one paid any attention. Does this sound familiar to you? When you choose to follow mankind's will, or even your own will for that matter, you will never, ever hear the voice of Yah, nor will your prayers be answered. And the next slide, verses 30-39. Then Eliyahu said to all the people, come here to me. And all the people came up to him. As he set out about repairing the altar of Yehovah they had broken down, Eliyahu took 12 stones in keeping with the number of tribes of the sons of Yaakov, to whom the word of Yehovah had come, saying, your name is to be Israel. With the stones he built an altar in the name of Yehovah. Then he dug a trench around the altar, large enough for half a bushel of grain. He arranged the wood, cut up the bull, and laid it on the wood. Then he said, fill your pots, next slide, fill your pots with water and pour it on the burnt offering and on the wood. And they did it. Do it again, he said. and they did it again. Do it a third time, he said, and they did it a third time. By now the water was flowing around the altar and it had filled the trench. Then when it came time for offering the evening offering, Eliyahu the prophet approached and said, Yehovah, Elohim of Avraham, Yitzhak and Yaakov, let it be known today that you are Elohim in Israel, that I am your servant and that I have done all these things at your word. Next slide. Hear me, Yehovah, hear me, so that this people may know that you, Yehovah, are Elohim, that you are turning their hearts back to you. Then the fire of Yehovah fell. It consumed the burnt offering, the wood, the stones and the dust, and it licked up the water in the trench. When all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and said, Yehovah is Elohim. Yehovah is Elohim. Yehovah wants us to trust him, to believe in him, to believe in his power, and not rely on mankind to fulfill our needs. As much as we love our spouse, we have to put Yah ahead of our spouse and our children. We can only truly do that when we have acknowledged that Yeshua is number one in our lives. If there is no fire on these altars we have set up to worship, that we have set up to worship our living Yah, if there are no soaking tears, the sacrifice there, then there will be no answers. No matter how much we shout and run and jump or even slash ourselves, we cannot have anyone ahead of Yah in our lives. If there is no worship and trust in the real, true, living Yah, there will never be a revival in our walk, in this congregation or in the land. If there is no pure sacrifice, there can be no moving of Yah in our lives, in our congregation or in our land. The first thing Eliyahu did was this. Let's go to slide 10, please. The first thing Eliyahu did was he said, come to me. He called the people to him, and all the people came to him as he set about repairing the altar of Yehovah that had been broken down. Our altars need repairing. They have sat without fire on them for too long. In the next slide, in verse 30, then Eliyahu said to all the people, come here to me, and all the people came up to him as he set about repairing the altar that had been broken down. They watched him as he fixed that broken altar. That was an indication that they had something in their own lives that needed fixing. In Vayikra Leviticus chapter 1, 1-3, it says, Yehovah called to Moshe and spoke to him from the tent of meeting. He said, speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when any of you brings an offering to Yehovah, you may bring your animal offering either from the herd or from the flock, that is from the sheep, the goat or the cow. Is his offering is a burnt offering from the herd, a bovine, he must offer a male, that is a bull, without defect. He is to bring it to the entrance to the tent of meeting so that it can be accepted by Yehovah. What kind of offering do we make to Yehovah? We can't make bull offerings of bulls and cows and goats and sheep. Is our sacrifice that we offer up to him with regret and envy? Do we offer unto Yah freely those things that he has instructed us to give, or do we give them to Yehovah with resentment, or not give at all? What kind of sacrifice do you bring for Yehovah in coming here today, or did you not bring one? Yes, coming to a Shabbat service is a sacrifice. We have to lay down whatever's going on in the world and spend time with Yah. Paying tithes is a sacrifice. giving a sacrificial or free will offering is a sacrifice. But it has to be given freely with love. And you should be glad that you have something to offer unto Yah at all. Those sacrifices are good, but what about your body? Did you offer it to Yehovah? As the scriptures say in slide 12, please. Romans 12, verse 1. I exhort you, therefore, brothers, in view of Elohim's mercies, to offer yourselves as a sacrifice, living and set apart for Yehovah. This will please him. It is the logical temple worship for you. You can't bring sheep and goats and bulls, but you can bring yourself. You can keep yourself pure in obedience to his Torah to come to him. In Tehillim or Psalms 51:17, King David says, my sacrifice to Elohim is a broken spirit. Yehovah, you won't spurn a broken, chastened heart. If you come to him in complete repentance, you will be forgiven. And Yah accepts that as your offering of sacrifice. You may think that Yah will accept anything you bring. But Cain, the first son of Adam, brought of the fruit of the ground, and it wasn't accepted by Yehovah. His brother Havel, Abel, offered a perfect sacrifice. Why? He gave the best of his flock. He gave a blood sacrifice. He gave Yehovah his best, and it was acceptable in the sight of Yehovah. Now, I know Cain couldn't bring a blood sacrifice from the fruit of the ground. It's impossible. But he was able to bring fruit without spot or blemish. He was able to bring perfect fruit. It doesn't say in Scripture that he brought the best of his produce. It just says he brought it. So this to me explains the unacceptability of Cain's offering. It was just anything will do. That's why Yah couldn't accept it. Our biblical heritage is in jeopardy of coming into extinction unless we turn back to Yehovah and his pure word as we offer ourselves up as a pure sacrifice unto him. We need to stop complaining about what it takes to please Yah. I will keep saying it, as I have said many times before. If you're doing the best you can do, you are doing excellently, and Yah doesn't want any more than that from you. But it has to be your best. And this does not apply if you're not putting in or bringing your best effort. You may not like the changes that have been made when we moved to this venue, but I do see people making changes and making commitments. When others have not come to this venue at all or have dropped off from coming because of their true commitment to Yah is not really there yet. And some people come and go and come and go. Some people will come for a while and then come off. They're not ready. They're not ready to make that pure sacrifice. And this is why we don't chase them. If people say they're not coming back, we won't talk them into coming back. You see, we have a free will. We have the right to worship where we feel we want to worship. And if we want to follow some other man or some other person or some other ministry, that's fine by me. I can't stop you doing it. I won't talk you into it or try and change your mind. You have to hear from Yehovah for yourself. It's nothing I say is going to make any difference. You have to be able to set yourself apart to make that sacrifice. It doesn't matter what you do on a Shabbat. if you're willing to give that up to come to Shabbat, Yah sees that. He's going to honor it. I don't know, you know, how many people, since they've been coming to a Shabbat service, have seen things turn around and change in their lives. Most have. Others, when they haven't, have dropped and gone by the wayside. Those that have made the change are getting back to what I call holiness convictions. They are hungry for a move of Yah in their lives, and they are tired of the places where the service brings no deliverance to people. These are the people that will see the difference in their spiritual walk with Yehovah. Some of you will grow stronger this year because you're willing to follow Minister Sean's or my instructions through Yah's word. Don't get mad if we tell you that this is time that we want you to do such and such. Just do it, and we can see the blessing of Yah on you for your obedience. And I know I can speak for Minister Sean, and I was hoping he's going to be here today, but he's not, as well as myself in this. But if we want you to pray, it's because prayer will change your life. We want you to fast for a breakthrough if necessary, because it will change your life. We want you to give your best, not just in this place, but in your home, in your work, in your community, and because it will also change your life. We want you to dress modestly, because it will change your life, especially how you are seen in your workplace, in your social life, and in the people you come in contact with. Yehovah sent Malachi and me to start this congregation because we had been given instructions on where he wants the Messianic community to go. That in itself was an apostolic move. Only we don't look on ourselves as apostles, as I said earlier. We see ourselves as servants. Yeshua was a servant. Just like he gave Moshe the plan to get Israel to Canaan, he gave me the plan on how to get back to his original of Torah observance, including Shabbat worship and the observation of his required festivals. He hasn't told me to change it in over 20 years, so until he does, we will continue to learn and grow in Yah as he keeps directing us. Those that follow Moshe made it. They made it to the promised land. Those that murmured and complained died in the wilderness. What do you want to do? Get to heaven or die in the wilderness complaining about what is expected of you through Torah obedience? It is time to focus on Hashemayim, on heaven, not on you and your conveniences. Nothing about going to heaven is a convenience. Let me assure you, it is a struggle. And it continues as a struggle. And that's why it's a sacrifice. Can we go to the next slide, slide 13, please? In Matityahu 11:12, from the time of Yochanan the Immerser until now, the kingdom of heaven has been suffering violence. Yes, violent ones are trying to snatch it away. If you are going to heaven, you are going to have to fight your way through the enemy's tactics. He has snares set all around for you. But I know where they are, and between Sean and I, we can help you avoid them. Matityahu 7:14 says, "But it is a narrow gate and a hard road that leads to life, and only a few find it." This means that you have to watch every step. You will always have those that tell you, you don't have to do this or you don't have to do that. But with everything you need to do, You must do due diligence. You've got to check it out for yourself. You need to watch their life and see what direction they are going to make sure it is right according to the word of Yehovah, and just don't follow them blindly. People that don't serve Yah according to his word have no business trying to tell someone else how to do it. This is not just lay people or people on church boards or even pastors or priests. It does not matter who it is, you must check out their actions. Malachi and I have people living with us. They know how we live. They know how we act. We're not afraid to have people come and live in our home because we've got nothing to hide. So how many pastors and people do you know that take people into their home, or do they pass them off onto somebody else's home? Doesn't matter who it is, you must check where their actions line up with Yehovah's word. There is so much crime being revealed today through so-called benevolent charities, churches and youth groups, that we really need to be thorough in our due diligence. Yeshua said in Yochanan 4:39-40, "You keep examining the Tanakh because you think that in it you have eternal life. Those very scriptures bear witness to me, but you won't come to me in order to have life." You have to know the will of Yehovah before you can follow it. We go to the next slide, please. Matityahu 7:21-23. "You have heard that our fathers were told, 'Do not murder,' and that anyone who commits murder will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who nurses anger against his brother will be subject to judgment. That whosoever calls his brother 'you good for nothing' will be brought before the Sanhedrin. That whatever says 'fool' incurs the penalty of burning in the fire of Gehinnom. So if you are offering your gift at the temple altar and you remember that your brother has something against you, you've got to fix it. Thinking you know will only lead to disaster. You must know. Know like you know, like you know. Not just think I know. Know like you know, like you know the truth. And that's when the truth will set you free. If Yeshua says, 'Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men,' that is what he expects you to do. Follow Yeshua and not mankind. If he says to forsake your father and your mother, your brother and your sister, your wife and your children, and take up your stake and follow me, that's what he expects you to do. He's not asking you to do that anything he didn't do." We go to slide 16. In Luke 8:20-21, "It was reported to him, 'Your mother and brothers are standing outside and want to see you.' But he gave them this answer, 'My mother and brothers are those who hear Yehovah's message and act on it.'" They weren't there. They were just wanting him to talk to them. "Leave what you're doing and come out and talk to us." This is what he meant. He was more interested in what Yah's word was and sharing it with the people than being concerned with what his mother and brother or sisters wanted at the time. And there's many of us that have had to let go of our family in many ways to do that. Especially with my Jewish family, it's been very difficult. There's never been, sorry, Yochanan 2:5, do we go there? "But his mother was a wise woman, and she did say," the mother said to the servants, "'Do whatever he tells you.' She knew that he was a man of authority, and this is what started his ministry that was taken at the wedding at Canaan. There's never been anything glamorous or easy about being Torah observant. It has always been a struggle and a sacrifice, especially for those not born into it. Especially because if you do it the right way, Yeshua's 12 Talmudim, or as they were called, apostles, later on, after his ascension into heaven, they left their jobs, their homes, and gave their lives to share the gospel. And Yehovah doesn't expect anything less from us. I'm not asking you to do that. I'm not asking you to leave that. But it's your witness in your home, in your office, in your work, that is going to prove who you are in Yehovah. But we do suffer. We suffer the wrath of former Christian friends who tell us we're now under the law. Most of our Christian friends we lose altogether because they don't want to observe the Shabbat. They don't want to observe the festivals. They don't want to give up their prawns for Christmas. You see, there's so much that they can't give up. I mean, one of my cousins said to me, "Don't take me on a kosher cruise." He's Jewish, raised Jewish, bar mitzvahed, everything. But don't take me on a kosher cruise. He loves his prawns too much. I'll go on a kosher cruise any day. We have to do similar to what Yeshua did. We have to follow his example. I'm going to finish with this last scripture. Matthew 16:25-27. It says, "For whoever wants to save his own life will destroy it. But whoever destroys his life for my sake will find it. What good will it do someone if he gains the whole world but forfeits his life? Or what can a person give in exchange for his life? The Son of Man will come in his Father's glory with his angels. Then he will repay everyone according to his conduct." What kind of an example are we setting for our sphere of influence? That is our home, our family, our workplace and colleagues, our social activities and friends, and even our own messianic community. People talk about having faith and yet rob Yah, then they don't have faith. People talk about wanting to go to heaven and yet neglect the house of Yah, neglect prayer, neglect fasting for answered prayer. Now, I'm not saying I believe in fasting because some leader tells you that the whole congregation has to have a time of prayer and fasting for 40 days, but does not have a specific prayer purpose in mind. If the truth is known, the person requesting the prayer probably needs to lose weight because of the seasonal activities and puts everybody else on the fast. We do pray and fast, but there has to be a reason for it. I've prayed and fast and virtually watched someone come back from the dead. But you don't pray and fast, you will never ever see Sean or myself stand up here and say, "Everyone's got to pray and fast for the next 40 days. It won't happen. Because it's your time with Yah. Yah will tell you when he wants you to fast. And when he does, it's easy. It's literally easy. But you do it out of your own, out of Yah's strength, and do it because you are commanded by some mankind, then it's a struggle. It's a huge struggle. So, nothing wrong with prayer and fasting for the right reasons. People who make excuses why they can't do anything won't ever do anything because they will always find an excuse. Don't worry about them. They're not your problem. Let them go and let Yah deal with them. The scriptures are full of people that made excuses, and hell is full of the people that made them. Just follow those people who want to live according to Yah and his word. Seek Yeshua and use him as your example. Weigh up the scriptures and make sure they are not given out of context. Then you will grow in your walk and be at complete shalom, knowing that you did the best that you could do. Look forward to the day that Yehovah says to you, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Also remember that shalom is not just peace. Shalom means that you are content in your circumstances. It means that it doesn't matter how much you've got or how little you've got. You are content with what Yah has supplied you with. If that is all, and I pray daily, "Yah, don't give me too much that I can get robbed because people want what I've got, or too little that I've got to steal to eat. Just give me enough for each day and to supply what I need for my life and for this congregation. That's all I ask." Because it doesn't matter how much money we've got, we can't take 1 cent with us. Doesn't matter what our clothes are like or what we've got on this earth, we can't take any of it with us, ever. Yes, people bury it with them. That's not going to help. We look at all those Egyptian tombs and the riches that were in them. But then, of course, they're still there, aren't they? The riches were still there. We just need enough for our provision. That doesn't mean that we can't ask for something that's not unreasonable. Can I share your story? Rachel and Ivory were looking for a home. They were looking for a 3-bedroom one down New South Wales on the border, Tweed Heads Way. And everything was too expensive. And they eventually told me that they were looking for a new home, and could I pray? I said, "Sure. But I'm praying for a 4-bedroom home with 2 bathrooms. I don't think I said the double garage though, did I?
I asked for that.
You asked for that? But I said you'll get a 4-bedroom home, 2 bathrooms for the price of a 3-bedroom. They moved in to their 4-bedroom home with 2 bathrooms and 2 garages last weekend. A 4-bedroom home with 2 bathrooms is not asking for too much when you've got 4 children. Because some children still have to share. So we're only asking to supply our needs. That is a need. It's not a want, it's a need. And Yah provides. If you have a need, please don't hesitate to tell me. I will pray. I know Yah hears my prayers. I know he answers them. So, please, you are all good and faithful servants, and I'm sure Yah will answer your prayers.